All right, we're doing the Brain Trust podcast, and it's Adam Vass, the tabletop game designer from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And I'm Willie Ups, a tabletop game designer in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Adam, it's that time of year again, that really special time of year that both you and I love.
That's right, it is
Halloween. It really feels like Halloween right now to me. Everything's feeling scarier than normal.
Yeah.
On this ep, we're going to talk about, we love making horror games, and we're going to talk about some of our favorite horror game experiences, and what the kind of future for horror games might look like. So I'm excited, but otherwise, I want to know, what's kind of your go-to Halloween decoration? Do you pop off? Do you kind of have low-level Halloween all the time, or not much of anything?
There's definitely a pseudo-goth, witchy vibe around that's sort of evergreen.
Same here.
I don't personally go hard for Halloween decorations. I do have a Sam from Trick or Treat little, guy that's probably,
so good.
2 or 3 feet tall. Last year, when Campfire came out, I was taking promo pictures with the game parts, in his little bowl.
Sam.
And I usually leave him in the living room and put a bunch of Sour Patch Kids in the bowl and just kind of pick at them.
Trick or Treat is the best Halloween movie.
Yeah.
It's so hard to beat.
No real contention for me. That's just the tops.
It's got awesome narrative design, and the anthologies are great. I did a game night at the horror bookstore in Toronto called Little Ghosts. And one of the regulars has a full print Trick or Treat shirt, a full bleed
all
shirt.
Over.
Yeah. And, I almost asked, where did you get that? And can you tell Adam where to get that?
I, went to Spirit Halloween this week and almost picked up some more Trick or Treat merch. I do already have shirts and socks, multiple.
To the listeners, that just sounds normal because it's October. But to me right now, that's pretty early. I've never been to a Spirit Halloween. The only Halloween stores I go to are abandoned buildings until October. And then they become Halloween superstores.
Yeah, that's what Spirit is, but it just starts a little earlier. It starts in September.
Oh, okay. That's when you start hearing Mariah Carey's Christmas song, but it's really just John Carpenter's Halloween theme.
It's
or
just
Danny Elfman's Halloween theme.
Yeah, bones clanking together.
Yeah, we have a low-level Halloween situation going on right now. Just on our door, the only thing on anyone's door in our apartments are either a left Amazon package that will not be claimed for weeks. I don't know what the kind of eminent domain laws here in Canada, when you can just pick up an Amazon package you have made eye contact with for 17 days straight. But there's that. There's either a doormat or, in our case, a giant skeleton nailed to the door. And that's the only thing. Only art visible in the hallways is this articulated flat skeleton. And sometimes, I might have told the story on the podcast before, but when I open the door too fast, the skeleton will swing into the apartment and I will get scared by it. Gotta have a spring-loaded jumping skeleton.
I have a thought that, so this year they're supposed to be, actually, let me log on to Letterboxd. They're making a Spirit Halloween movie.
Oh my god.
It's called Spirit Halloween the Movie.
And it's really good.
It says it's supposed to come out this year, but obviously it's coming up soon and there's no trailer or anything. So I'm a little suspicious.
Well, if it's a Spirit Halloween movie, might they take an old dumpy movie and then make that into a Spirit Halloween movie? use all of the insights of it.
Oh, do a C-Lab 2020 where they are dubbing over the audio of another horror movie?
That would be great.
I was thinking, oh, there is a trailer.
Oh, shit.
Christopher Lloyd is in it.
That's wild. What does it take to book close to Christopher Lloyd nowadays?
Not as much as it apparently once did. So my idea was going to be, let's make a Spirit Halloween the game. I don't know what that looks like. So that's,
I'm into that.
But I also want to, like, maybe let's, before we dig into design theory craft, let's talk about some horror stuff that we like, or game horror games that we either have made or played or whatever that are banging.
Yeah, I want to shout out Babes in the Wood, second edition. That was nominated for an Emmy this year. I'm playing with the little orange die right now that has the pumpkin as the six. The game's awesome. I really want to play it this year. I'm going to try and play a bunch of horror games this Halloween, and I want that to be one of them.
It is a really fun seasonal thing. Like, I used to do, every October, I would do, like, a four-week campaign, and just...
Oh, that's so fun.
Every weekend, you play the next Hollow of Babes, but you get this, like, mini story arc, and that was really a blast, and obviously, I think I've talked about this at length, too, of just, like, how fun it is to roleplay as kid characters.
Right,
and
yeah.
Have that, like, really pure, imaginative play experience. Thank you. That's a good... I honestly didn't even think of that because I was trying to go for, like, scarier. But Babes
I think
is the,
like,
Halloween game.
Yeah, like, you and I watch horror movies year-round.
Right.
And I find that, like, when Halloween comes along, I want to watch the more fun horror movies. Like,
yeah, I think that's
nothing,
true.
It can't be longer than 2.5 hours, and it can't have any overwhelming atmosphere in it. So that's why, like, Trick or Treat is great. It's not, like, going to haunt me through the... That's the kind of, like, modern wave of horror movies that I love. The, like, really long, atmospheric, ends with, like, a complete apocalypse. So movies like Incantation or, like, The Medium or The Wailing are just, like, that's it for me. That's my yeah. daily driver. It's like this grueling and human kind of saga story thing. And so, yeah, in Halloween, I just kind of want Hocus Pocus and Trick or Treat and Friday the 13th and, like...
Like fun. Like,
yeah,
horrible fun.
Like the superheroes of horror movies.
Yeah, I watched The Craft last night, and it felt like that.
That's one, of course. Yeah. Oh, The Craft is awesome.
That's an excellent point. Because one game, the game that I was going to plug that, is a great horror experience, but it's not as, like, campy fun as we're just, it can be. It's The Zone by Raph D'Amico. Yeah. Play to Lose, Stalker / Annihilation / going into a weird place and everyone mutating until they die one by one. Just an amazingly fun game and can be as creepy or silly or whatever. Like, you set the tone because it's GM-less and it's such a level playing field. Like, everyone gets to have so much input and share that collaboration that you can really tone correct to have the experience you want. So,
And here's this. You can play The Zone right now, and not only that, when this airs, it will be on Kickstarter. So go check that out. You can find it at laughingkaiju.com. Raph is just an awesome game designer, and The Zone is such a feat of game design in general. So that's going to be a blast. If you played it in digital, you will not believe the things you get to do in physical.
It would be really fun to do The Zone as, like, a haunted house or, like, a trick-or-treat. Like, replacing the locations with, like, Old Man Jenkins' house or the Doghead Bridge or whatever. And, like,
I wonder if you could just play The Zone with campfire cards.
Yeah, or vice versa. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be cool.
Yeah, there's definitely some cool crossover potential there.
Crossover. So here is something I have wanted to play and work on also. So around this time last year, I had just finished playing all of the new Resident Evil games. So like 2 and 3 remakes and then 7 and 8. Did you know why Resident Evil 7 is scared of Resident Evil 8?
Why is that?
7, 8, 9. So I want a modern role-playing game that does a horror campaign in the style of these kind of modern Resident Evil games. So not so much like power fantasy, more like you get to tell anthology stories with the same cast, and some stuff is brought over like lore, but the location completely changes, and something like that. And I've kind of just named it to myself like the horror campaign game. And I think there are games like Cult or Chill that are good at these, but I think something with modern sensibilities is
so
kind of waiting to be made.
I'm thinking without that, I've not played any Resident Evils, but on like a much lighter scale, it almost feels kind of like Scooby-Doo, right?
Yeah.
Like you have the gang and you have these horror episodes that don't necessarily tie to one another. They can be bespoke, but the gang is what ties them together.
Chris Redfield is Fred, and Shaggy is definitely could be Leon. All my RE heads know what I'm talking about. When I say Jill Valentine, is it Daphne? Okay, go ahead.
That bit's not for me, but I do appreciate that it's for someone.
You would love Resident Evil's Mr. X. Have you heard about this guy?
No.
Okay, before you get to your thing, I'm just going to tell you that in Resident Evil 2 and 3, in the middle of the game, there is this guy, this like 8 foot tall, chain face kind of dude wearing a like huge leather trench coat that's like wrapped around him. Look up a picture of him while I'm explaining this.
Mr. X.
Mr. X, Resident Evil. And he will just serve as this figure that in Resident Evil 2, you're playing in this police station trying to figure out what's happening in Raccoon City. And he will bust through one of the doors and just chase you for the whole game. And you got to like spend the game getting in and out of this police station while avoiding Mr. X. And he's just such a funny Frankenstein guy who's so scary because he just does like a... My mom said it's my turn to play Xbox. Kind of walk to you while you're doing this. And he's unkillable and everything like that. And so what I'm trying to say is that's Scooby.
He is a big fucker. He's got Solomon Grundy energy from Batman. Just big man who will
big
crush.
Big man. Yeah, and then you... The first game, you do not see the last of him. And then Resident Evil 3, he comes back, and his name is, like, the creature or something fucked up like that. But, yeah, you were saying about Scooby-Doo campaign-wise?
So, I think this might be the segue into the design portion, because I think this is how a Spirit Halloween game can work.
Ooh, yeah.
Spirit Halloween is a chain store. It only exists for like 2 months a year for some reason, always in like abandoned Toys R Us buildings.
And, yep.
They just sell kind of schlocky Halloween costumes and decorations and stuff. They're making a Spirit Halloween the movie, and Spec wrote a pitch for a Spirit Halloween movie the other day because...
Hell yeah.
I'm like, I haven't seen anything about the development of this, and I just want to call a shot. But I think that's what... I'm going to just turn that into the game here. And then also, yeah, when we were just chatting, I saw there is a trailer, so I do want to see that. But we're going in blind right now, so we will have not seen the trailer or read the synopsis of the Spirit Halloween movie as we talk about this. But... I think the thing about a Spirit Halloween game, and call it whatever, I mean, Spirit has a charm to it because it's so schlocky and like teeny, which I think is fun. Again, when we're going for like this sort of lighter horror, sort of like the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark movie.
Yeah.
That we have a Halloween store that sells actually cursed items.
Yes.
This is our setting.
I'm thinking that, like, even picking a character is like walking through the costume section and being like, oh, do I want to be the firefighter or do I want to be the hippie? And you pick between these, like, archetypal roles that are made into Halloween costumes, and then that's like your character package.
Yeah, I want to be the guy with the fish head from Fortnite.
I want to be a sexy nurse. Like, yeah, I want to be Jill Valentine. I want to be Chris Redfield. Okay, I have to stop with the and just like that with the cursed items, you select a couple grab bag things of like, okay, we're gonna get the Necronomicon and we're gonna get Mr. X's trench coat, and we're going to get a disembodied hand. And then you whip up a campaign frame based around that, and then you play a couple sessions connecting those things and being the characters dealing with those situations within this kind of Spirit Halloween Superstore framework thing.
Yeah, I like that this is sort of Tales from the Loopy, like, we're going to solve this ourselves because we love Halloween, right? It's almost like a Scream aspect.
Yeah.
Like, we know horror, we know horror movies, and we know the tropes, so we have power over them. I also like maybe there's like a trick-or-treat element to getting your like starter kit too. So you pick a costume, and then there's like a metaphorical bowl of candy that is your starting items or starting skills or whatever, and people can pick from just to sort of like ham up the Halloween aspect and also enjoy the sort of like randomness of like, what am I supposed to do with a like a fake witch's broom? Like, not a witch's broom that can fly, it's just literally a broom. And that sounds really fun. And then I think the actual act of play is like, so you have one episode, like, someone bought this, like, cursed baby that won't stop crying. And so we're going to go to their house and, like, investigate and do X, Y, and Z. And then there can be another one that's, like, in the Spirit Halloween, like, you know, you step there. They have the big decoration, like, the robots that you, like, step on a pad and then the thing, like, talks to you or whatever.
Yeah,
that thing just came to life or whatever, and it's like wreaking havoc in the store. So like,
yeah, do you remember that show Warehouse 23?
No,
it was like the show, and it was this warehouse like in the end of Indiana Jones where they dump off the Ark of the Covenant, spoiler alert, and it just shows like this endless warehouse of artifacts, magical artifacts that are just kept somewhere underground. And it's exactly like that, like everything in the store is like a super powered thing, like in the basement of Cabin in the Woods, and selecting a combination of them creates like a unique story that plugs into each other. And, I am into this, especially like connecting elements, like finding out how elements make sense with each other, like the witch broom and the weird animatronic thing and whatever. You create like a meta narrative around it that becomes like an improv exercise.
Yeah. I'm picturing this too as being somewhat of a traditional experience of like players with stats and a GM. Because I think that would be more fun. And I also think there's a lot of fun there for the GM to get to do the stitching and be silly. And the GM is the spirit effectively. Like,
yeah, the manager at the Spirit Halloween, the floor supervisor. Yeah. And I think, like, we can implement the Halloween energy, too, with, like, maybe hit points is pieces of candy, and you can spend pieces of candy to get advantage or disadvantage someone else, and having a trick-or-treat kind of mechanism, too, might be cool.
Yeah, what if... I wonder... So my first thought was that we could like use something like Tunnel Goons by Nate Treme as like a core system, because it's slick and simple, and it's just like allows for a lot of bells and whistles that we could get to do. But I do like the sort of tangible aspect of like a bowl of candy, like a bowl of treats.
Yeah.
Or even, I guess, Nate also has that game Prol, that's like a coin flipping mechanic, where like we could have, you know, coin side A is trick and coin side B is treat, and like you're flipping a number of coins equal to stat or whatever.
Yeah, what is trick or treating other than advantage and disadvantage? Like, if it's a treat, you get to describe the reward and you have to roll to see if you get it. And if it's a trick, you describe the circumstances and then roll. It's like kind of like the fiasco thing. And right. Then you roll to see what happens.
Yeah, light and dark die.
Yeah, totally.
I really like that. The trick or treat mechanic too. That's cool. That could just be blown up. Like, that could just be its own little core system, the trick or treat SRD, and say like, you know, tricking and treating are two opposite things, but each one has a spectrum. So like, light darks are treat, or light dice are treats, and dark dice are tricks, and.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of fudgy, like,
yeah,
zero is totally. Just sort of like nothing, and you want to get further on the spectrums, because even like further of a trick is still like more exciting,
right? It's like that's kind of playing into those cursed items, and
right,
more positive is more into like your own character elements. Yeah, I think there should probably be like a goodie bag involved, or like something like that as like a super prize, or if you get on the far end of that spectrum or in the center or something, you get to pull from the goodie bag and it creates, you know, maybe it plays a hard move by the Mr. X or the cursed baby.
Right. There could even, like, I really like too the notion of this, the Halloween store being our central location. And we leave it and we do adventures outside of it or inside or whatever. But it is just like a store full of shit. So like, yeah. Instead of like a more traditional fantasy thing where it's like, there's this ancient sword that's in the bottom of this dungeon. It's like, well, we're already in the warehouse that has all the spooky shit in it. But like, some of it's expensive, I guess. Or like, maybe there's like a cost that's not monetary too.
Yeah, it's like this, the store is like the hub world or the main menu of this game, and you're able to pick and choose your experience based on what's in there. I mean, that's a pretty cool. What other role-playing game starts with you just as a person in a store and then figuring out what kind of game you want to play and all this opt-in stuff as like the actual experience of being in a Spirit Halloween and choosing your costume?
Yeah, that's really fun. Also makes me think of like Darkest Dungeon, the idle game, where it's like we're at this central place where everyone kind of chills. This is also where you can like send your characters to heal, like you can send them to go like do their vices or whatever. And then when you have a mission, you're like, oh, you and you, let's go. Because I like this sort of potential for West Marches. Like,
yes,
we have, again, like, our whole crew of friends that all hang out at Spirit Halloween, like, all little mall rats. And then when we play, it's, like, whatever group of us gets together. Like, this is another, like, October-long campaign game where you keep accruing items and, like, doing whatever to the benefit of the store or to yourselves.
Yeah, and you get your, like, final Halloween confrontation and... If you've gotten enough of the cursed items, you begin with advantages on it or something like that. Like, it's this cumulative things that before the store closes, you have to wrap up the meta mystery.
Yeah.
Because it's only open for a couple months.
Yeah. Our story takes place in September and October only, and the finale is Halloween night, and you're like... the meta narrative is building towards this culmination, like this confrontation with something.
Yeah.
Which is probably the store manager, or like, I guess the spirit, right? Like spirit Halloween's spirit.
It's like when they talk to the dragon in Dragon Ball.
Is that real?
Yeah, oh yeah, they talk, that's why they're getting the Dragon Balls. Do you know how you watch Dragon Ball?
No, I never have. I didn't think there were actually dragons in it.
There is a dragon. There's a couple, actually. Spoiler alert. One per planet. And you, yes.
I didn't know there was planets.
Okay, welcome to the Dragon Ball Corner. I'm Will. Welcome to Will Kai Dragon Ball. So basically, the Dragon Balls are created by a guy named Kami, who watches over the whole world on this big tower. And on this world, there are 7 special balls, labeled 1 to 7. And when you collect all the balls, you summon Shenron, the big dragon, who shoots out of the ground and will grant you a single wish. The wish is usually, could you make Goku not dead? It's usually the level of wish. But something happens and the Dragon Balls break, and they have to go to the planet where Piccolo is from, and they have a much bigger, funkier dragon on that planet.
Do they have bespoke balls?
The balls are different there as well. And you can only bring someone back to life once, so it becomes a whole thing. And you have to have all the balls together, and when you make a wish, the balls fly into the air and then distribute randomly across the entire Earth, and they turn into stone. So you have to go try and find them again.
Is this the Spirit Halloween quest?
I think it is.
We have 7 cursed
Holy
items.
Shit.
We have 7 cursed items that have been, like, they're missing in the store inventory. So, like, the rest of the store you can use to whatever your ends are. But you have to go out and find these 7 cursed items. So instead of, like, someone bought this cursed baby, well, maybe they bought the cursed baby. Maybe it fell off a truck, air quotes.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe it's, like movie memorabilia.
Oh, yeah. And then, like, you know, if you're looking for a Michael Myers mask, you're going to find it being worn by some motherfucker who's trying to get you.
My aunt is going to shit when I remind her why I watched Dragon Ball as a kid and she didn't like it. So, yeah. Finally paying off knowing about Dragon Ball.
And then, yeah, once we collect all 7 cursed relics, we get a wish from the spirit on Halloween night.
Oh, nice. And, yeah, the wish, like, I like a role-playing game that's like, this is a campaign game, but you can only play it for 2 months. And then it's going to end, and you have to make a wish, and then the wish will require you to come back next year and see what happened. So you get to marinate in it for a year.
I think, too, so say each item is 1 session of play, and I'm doing 7 because Dragon Ball, but, like, it could be 3, you know, like it could be however long you want to play.
Yeah, 7, 6, 6, 6.
6 is great. I also think just the number of weekends in October is a great number.
Yeah, true.
But say each one, like, is that trick or treat. You know, like, we got this item, but we caused some harm in the process to the town. And so that's going to be a trick dice. And then, or, oh, we got this item and we got away clean and everything's good. That's a treat dice. And then at the end, when we request our wish, we do the fiasco thing of rolling them all and seeing on that spectrum how our wish is interpreted then. Because, like, do we get what we actually want, or is this like a monkey paw situation?
Right. And then you see the ramifications, and then it influences the next time you sit down to play.
Yeah, I do like that time capsule aspect of it, too, of, like, what if we each wrote down our wish on a card, put it in an envelope, put that envelope in a jack-o'-lantern, and put it back in storage, so next Halloween we pull that jack-o'-lantern out and we read our wishes or whatever.
Yeah, I like that. And because it's a year, as designers, we can, like, just make the 2023 pack that has like a couple new costumes and a couple new artifacts.
Yeah.
To be your game.
That's really cool.
Damn. It's early for us to nail it like that.
Yeah. Let's throw a quick break in and maybe we'll try our luck and see if we can do something, another thing, like another.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Fuck it. Welcome back to the Brain Trust Podcast. We have a position open for a stenographer who can just, anybody who can touch type, take down all of our ideas and produce it into games. We would love that.
This last month, I feel like, has been especially fruitful in terms of things that we want to play and maybe don't want to write.
Yeah. You know, I had this experience last month where we wanted a couple new games for our game night at Little Ghosts in Toronto. And I wrote two games, tested them, and then worked with Seb to produce them. And so, like, in a month, wrote, tested, and made two different games. And it was great to remember that I still got it. Like, I'm not fully compressed into, or not compressed, that I have, like, grown into the vestigial shell of making big book games, but that I could do the small thing really fast, do a good job. But wow, is it rough to do that. Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's what I've been doing for 4 or 5 years, and I'm finally on a sabbatical from it.
Yeah.
It is fun. It is really, like, kind of intoxicating, too, to have that wrote it on Friday, sent to print on Monday kind of feel.
It is, like, a high and a low that you get. Yes. That because, like, you have kind of made it a constant thought in your mind that you're working on this thing, and time is not on your side. And with something like this, it was like, well, I'm going to have people play it, and so it has to be like, I have to know that people can run it by themselves and all that stuff. And there is something about, like, the emotional management of a larger project that you just spend more time on. You have all the time to, like, express all of the ideas something could be. And I greatly prefer that, I think, to making something with the same process that's small. I don't know. It's a weird thing.
They're sort of apples and oranges to me. They do both feel good and bad in their own ways.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because, like, on a small thing, you can just have an idea that you think is good and then make it, and then it's not so good. And it's nice to be in a place where you don't have to show anybody. You don't have to make it good, which I like.
Yeah, it doesn't feel bad to fail in that way, or, like, to not meet your own expectations or something.
There's this art podcast I listen to, and there is this concept that, like, some paintings never make it out of adolescence or the terrible twos or their teens, and some paintings live to be old and mature. And so that means that, like, sometimes you can really only express one thought and not really develop it, that because that's just the time that you had and that's kind of what the idea needed and that kind of stuff. And other times, for games like Cyber Metal or Campfire or stuff like that, you work it over so many times that it is a fully matured and developed thing. So from the outside, it seems like every design decision was an inevitability.
Yeah,
that there, like, an onlooker would just say, of course it's like this. But it's a hugely long process that I think we both love doing, but it's definitely moving in between those, not being able to be like, okay, well, I got this, and it's, I know it's bad now, but I'm going to spend time thinking about it and testing it and applying my process to it. That, like, making a game happen in a month is much less of a party trick and much more of a, let me just do one third of my process on this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can totally see how that kind of stuff looks like a party trick. Like,
oh, totally.
Yeah, like what we do on this podcast is like how we think about games all the time in our own heads. And so it's really easy for us to just pop out some ideas that we don't have to mechanically connect until we do. And a great example is at the time of record, Discord Ghosts is in editing, and it's going to be out in print probably when this comes out, or soon after. I just probably fucked myself by saying that. you know, the difference between the first game and the game now, the GOTY Revised Edition, is unknowably huge, the amount of thought that went into it. But it's still the same game.
Right.
And so it's rare that you get an experience like that, that we could just kick out that idea, make it happen, play it, it's good. And then what does the AAA development time version of that look like? And it's like, it just looks a lot better.
There's some Ship of Theseus stuff going on with it too. Like, it is the same game, but it's kind of not. Like, at its core, I think it is. Epistemologically, I think it's the same game, but
yeah,
it's different enough too that, like, you can compare the two side by side. You can see obvious and like more subtle change and like response to it being played and more considerable thought going into it and this and that. So it is the same, but it's also kind of like a completely. It's like what we did a month or two ago where we, like, reevaluate how we would design games we've designed before.
Yes. Yeah.
And in this case, it's more similar to the original because the original was already pretty good.
Yeah, it's like the difference between taking a picture, getting a flash bulb, and putting it down, like recording it, and then what happens when I try and recreate this picture in with clay or something, or like if I completely illustrate it or I render everything. And it's not that like there's, you know, it's obsessively made or there's tons of extra detail. It's just like, here is everything you could want for this that it should have or something. Like, yeah, it's weird to conceptualize this.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely gets into that sort of, like, what is it that we do? Kind of, like, weird philosophical. And I think sometimes it's fun to play around in that thought space, and I think other times we're both like, I don't want to touch. I don't want to know.
Yeah, that, you know, some of it's like, what's the difference between the second dimension and the third dimension? Like, another of it, yeah, it's just like, I just wanted this to be like this. It doesn't, yeah.
I feel like this is a unique horror experience.
Yeah, truly.
This is that heavier horror, that year-round horror of just, like, someone losing their grip and watching it cascade.
Monster, a zombie with no conscience. Yeah, I mean, you know, we are learning all the time in this gig, and some of that is like making your processes more explicit and knowing when to take something to the next level and the level beyond that. And so that's just cool to see. Like, I think it's pretty rare that you get to see a game that is 4 pages long and then a game that is much longer and has a lot more hands and experience and people and humanity inside of the manuscript. It's just cool. It's just kind of wild to see. It's like a Cronenberg transformation scene.
Dang, I feel like we mentioned before recording doing the Cronenberg verse, but I feel like it's too late to dip into that.
Ooh, 20 minutes of the Cronenverse. Well, okay, how about a report of your time at the Brood, the Cronenberg coffee shop?
Okay, I did get to visit recently the Brood in Chicago, Illinois. It's a coffee shop that's horror-themed. It's a play on words that I didn't get until I said it out loud. but it's very cool. It's connected to physically and I think logistically connected to Bric-a-Brac Records in Chicago.
Wow, I played there.
I remember when you came to Assemble Guide, you had a Bric-a-Brac t-shirt.
Yeah, that's how they paid us. They gave us a t-shirt. they've got a big RoboCop on the wall, too. I looked at that for the whole gig.
But, yeah, it's a horror-themed coffee shop. They have a bunch of horror memorabilia, these huge foreign language movie posters, my favorite of which was Texas Chainsaw 2 from Italy. And Texas Chainsaw 2 is already a really strange movie that does not feel in line with Texas Chainsaw 1 in any way at all, but is pretty fun in its own right. In Italian, I translated it because the poster was interesting to me. It was, I think it was, "Don't go in there, too." Don't go in there.
Italian movie localizations have the best titles. There's a ton of westerns, spaghetti westerns that are like, "I take your gun, your woman, and your horse," like stuff like that.
I had the Firestarter drink, named after the Stephen King story. It was a oat milk latte with ancho chilies and cinnamon and orange extract or tangerine extract or something like that. It was really good. It was spicy and tasty. My partner had the Leland Palmer, which was the cold brew lemonade.
Ray Wise presents.
they have cereal. You can just get a bowl of Count Chocula or whatever while you're there. It's just a cool vibe. I got to go to a few horror-y places in Chicago on that trip. And also got to stop by Graveface, which is very new in Chicago. They have like a huge VHS rental library. There's like a serial killer mini museum in the back with a bunch of really interesting stuff. Cool. They work with or are affiliated with Terror Vision. So they have like weird movie soundtrack on vinyl and the WNUF Halloween special on Blu-ray and like these really cool obscure releases and stuff. And then they also have records. It was a very cool place. It just had opened like a week or two before we stopped. We were just driving and saw it. And I was like, "That, yeah, I'm going to pull over." Like, that seems
I'm
going
to
like,
have to step in there.
I don't know what Graveface is, but I'm going to find out real fast.
They're going to want to know who I am.
But yeah, if you're a horror head and you're in the Midwest or you're going to be passing through, there's a bunch of good stuff in Chicago. And I also found on that trip that, like, if you talk to the people there, they'll just tell you where to go next. Like,
that's so great.
It's always so fun. We stopped in this oddity shop. I wish so bad I remembered the name of it. It's next to Quesadilla, the vegan Mexican restaurant. So Google that. But it's a cool little oddity store. I always get some like weird books or little figures, or I get like astrology card sets there that are really cool. But the person working there told us to, you know, check out this vegan place, go to this horror bookstore, like basically just gave us this regiment of stuff to do for the rest of the day, because if you're into that world, like, you know all the spots, and that was really cool. So
that is such a good travel hack.
Yeah, the Chicago scary scene or like weirdo outsider art kind of stuff is really neat and well tied together in like a cool communal way. So I had a really great time in there.
Chicago is just like the best city for buying some shit.
Truly.
Like, you think it would be New York, but it's not. Absolutely not. It is for sure Chicago.
Yeah, I got away. I definitely spent some money I maybe didn't need to or didn't plan to spend. I got a Suspiria 2-disc Blu-ray set. Finally, I like could not find the Italian Suspiria. I could only find the Amazon one.
Oh my!
For a very long time, so I finally bought that. Got some Cronenberg merch. Just got some T-shirts and stuff. Just yeah, it was a good trip.
Got some gear for tour. I mean, that's great on stage.
Yeah, my horror ensembles are very fulfilled now. Like, I have quite a few.
Are you playing any shows on Halloween, or will you be back?
It's funny. The last show is October 30th.
Ooh, that's pretty much a Halloween show.
So that's at the Fest in Gainesville, Florida. And so we, on actual Halloween day, I will be in the bus driving from Florida to Michigan.
Truly the scariest possible Halloween.
I'm pretty sad about that because I do love Halloween time. I am happy that I'll be home for Christmas time, which is also very fun for me. But, yeah, leaving in September, coming back in November, I'm missing the peak. So I'm going to try to do some horror stuff. If you have, like, horror stores or horror experiences in your town in North America, please let me know on Twitter at WC Gameco so that I can check it out if I'm going to be there on tour, because I want to do those things during the day or on nights where we don't have shows or something.
That sounds like the best. And you can always take that Halloween energy, bring it into December, and make it Krampus time. Just pick an opposite day from Christmas and do a Krampus day.
Yeah, December 13th or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, great. Yeah, hit Adam up there on Twitter. That's where people can find you. What is going on? You got anything coming out?
Soulburner is still in the queue. It's gonna be shipping in November, hopefully. Supply chain accommodating. The plan is that's gonna be my last release for the year. Just talking about that, I kind of want to do a Krampus or a New Year's campfire deck. Maybe like a print and play. Maybe you and nice. I can do like a little December campfire zine thing or something.
I love that. That's such a blast. I've been running Campfire at this game night, and people love it.
It's so fun.
People love playing Campfire. Yeah. That's a blast. Well, great. We'll do that. And I am at will.com. I'm Will. I've been with you this entire episode. Jesus Christ. Brain emoji. Handshake emoji. Wait, it's Halloween, so a bowl of pasta in the dark emoji. Disembodied hand emoji.
Surgical glove filled with jello emoji.
Oh, wait, that's great. All right, thanks. Bye.